Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Big Red Bus. Doug and I recorded this episode, believe it or not, last Saturday before the Memphis game. But it is a set of timeless topics that we discuss: the future of Patrick Williams, Josh Giddey, Dalen Terry, and more. Doug made a bold prediction at the end about our record over the past week, and it turned out to be quite prophetic, as you will hear. But before we hit the road, let's reflect on something crucial about coaching in the NBA. There are two types of coaches: those who adapt their system to fit the talent, and those who expect the talent to adapt to their system. The truly good coaches and great coaches are the ones who adapt their system to the talent they have. And when you look at the Bulls last year, they were a slow-paced team built around DeMar DeRozan. And this year, they ranked near the top of the league in pace. That's an incredible coaching feat. So whether or not you're a fan of Billy Donovan, you have to give him credit for this. And as many people like to criticize this guy, I mean, this shift in play style, especially with limited talent, it's truly impressive. So he's managed to get this roster to buy in, and players like Zach and Vooch, I mean, they're having just incredible seasons. Vooch in particular, I think it's a career season for him. It's approaching that last season with Orlando, and Zach is performing so well. I mean, they become, in my opinion, tradable assets that should garner decent returns. But big picture, you got to trade him. I mean, we cannot finish 11th in a loaded draft and hand that pick to San Antonio. One last thing, I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to this show. Doug and I are passionate about the Bulls and this podcast, but it's the friendships and the community that we've built with all of you that mean the most to us. So I hope you had a fantastic Thanksgiving, and I hope your holiday season going forward is filled with family, friends, and lots of joy, and hopefully some very fun, bad Bulls losses. And until next time, let's go Bulls. Now enjoy the show. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago on a cold November day. I'm here. I'm C-Red Fred. I'm going to take you through with the twists and turns of the season. And I look to my right. Lo and behold, it's Doug Tonis, the great one. How you doing, brother?
Oh, we're just living the dream over here.
Seventh victory of the year. They're in seventh seed right now. See where this is going?
See where it's going? I see where it's going.
Seven titles.
The sevens are back.
On the horizon.
The sevens are back.
Sevens are back. So five out of the last seven games they've played, I guess, after tonight. So it's pretty exciting times. But I got to admit, they're doing a lot better than I expected. That might be due to the horrible status of the East. I think right now, so far, the Bulls have only won one game against the Western Conference. That was against Memphis earlier this year. And all their other six wins are against the Eastern Conference. But how do you feel about the team? What do you think at this point in the season as a 7-10 Bulls look into the playoffs again?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to think about it in the sense of, like, are you excited if they're the seventh seed? I mean,
of course.
Like, if they're winning, you know, on pace to win like 35 games and they make the playoffs as the seventh seed, you'd be excited about that. Like, it's hard for me to get too pumped, but you know, like, the team, I mean, they are more fun to watch this year, right? It's fast paced. You have games where it's like, wow, these guys look really good, and they shoot and they move the ball, and you know, the defense is probably never great, but you have games where it feels like they can run a team off the floor, and you know, we've never seen that. I remember there was this Casey Johnson tweet. I'm gonna hack the specifics of it, but it was something like, the Bulls have made 20 three-pointers, it was like four times already this year, and I think they've maybe even gone to five now, and they had not made 20 three-pointers in four total games in like the last three, four full seasons, which just shows like how much they're changing like their style of play and, you know, getting into the modern NBA style of play. I don't think they necessarily have all the modern NBA style of players, but you know, that's still, you know, they talked about changing the shot profile like, you know, 2 years ago. This year they finally did it. And you can now have games where you can hang with anyone, and you didn't feel like that in the past when you were hoping to hang with teams, you know, just with DeMar shooting twos. And, you know, now on a good game, you can hang with anyone.
Well, yeah, they got seven guys. Seven, Doug.
Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, six, but seven who are shooting 38% or more from the three-point line. Kobe White, Patrick Williams, Jalen Smith, Duarte, I guess it doesn't really count with the massive amount of, but he's 42%. Zach LaVine, Dalen Terry, I'll repeat, Dalen Terry at 44%, and Vooch at 46%, who's having an incredible year. I mean, it's shocking, really, to see how this team has completely remade itself in one season as a three-point shooting team, just with the, you know, removal of DeMar DeRozan, who's a great player, but obviously not conducive to this modern style of play. And I think it's a testament to Billy Donovan. I don't think there's many coaches who, in one season, could have completely redone their offensive philosophy like he has to an effective level. Because I think you would even concur this team is extremely limited in talent, albeit, though, I will say Vooch and Zach LaVine are playing at an all-star level. What say you?
Yeah, there was another great note I saw by Drew that was, I forget what site Drew's from, but it was like, could Vooch win most improved player this year? And he might be something like 8 years older than the other oldest guy to ever win it, or 5 years older. But it's like insane. He posted a bunch of stats, and it was like career high in field goal percentage, three-point percentage, true shooting percentage, all of this stuff. And it was not like he barely was ahead of the high. Like, he's just radically better. Like, this might be the, depending how you would put it, like the second best year of his career. I mean, it's like insane after last right year, which was like arguably the worst year of his career. I don't even know what to say about that. Like, just came out of nowhere, but he's playing great. And, you know, I have no problem. People would say, like, I'm just this huge Vooch hater. I have no problem telling people Vooch is playing great when he's playing great. And he's playing great. I mean, like, he's playing great. I mean, like, yeah, he's maybe an all-star if they have to put in a center. I mean, I don't think he's still one of the best 70 players in the league or anything, but he is playing great. And compared to last year, where it was like, yeah, he was a vet min guy. Now he's playing like a really good player.
It's so shocking and to me disappointing in a way, because, you know, there's so many people, oh, you were the biggest Vooch, like you too. I don't think I was at your level, but you're one of the biggest Vooch haters out there. And I'm like, yeah, of course, because he sucked. He was freaking horrible last year. His effective field goal percentage was a joke. He was not an efficient player. Shot 29% from three. And I've kind of talked about this ad nauseum. A big reason I'm certain the Bulls acquired him was his ability to hit the three, albeit not on a long tradition or long history of hitting it, but he was shooting over 40% when we acquired him. He's shooting 46.1% from three. It's incredible to go from 29% last year on high volume. He's shooting 46% on 4.5 attempts per game. It's a massive, dramatic turnaround, and it's disappointing in with the idea that, my gosh, if he would have played at this level in the previous 3 years, I think the Bulls' ceiling would have been considerably higher. I really believe they would have at least won a playoff series, because that ability to hit the three at this rate just pulls out the bigs, creates opportunities for everyone else. That's what the whole NBA game is today. Can you hit the three, number one, and you have players that can punish an extended defense trying to guard the three. And the Bulls have that now with him at the center position. We didn't have that one in the last 3 years. So bravo, you know, hats off to him. He's playing incredible. I'm thrilled, because on December 15th, you better be out the door. Do you think now, like, he's played into tradable status, number one, and number two, do you think the Bulls will trade him?
It's an interesting question to know what the Bulls will do. Because, like, right now, with Zach playing better and Vooch playing better, we just noted they're in the seventh spot. They're like a you know, playing team that would project to make it into the playoffs. And if they continue to do that, like, you trust this front office to say, we're gonna make another trade, you know, more that's youth oriented versus but might give us up a spot. I mean, you were just a couple of weeks ago just talking about how we had to, you know, tank for Flag, and our draft pick is the most important thing, and here you are celebrating our performance as being the seventh seed.
Well, so, you know,
it's complicated.
Seed,
yeah, so if we get to the sixth seed, you'll be very disappointed.
If they were six or eight, I would have been devastated.
Devastated. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, but I mean, it's complicated with the Bulls then, right? Like, do you just start chasing this low-rung playoff spot? I mean, you're still not good. I mean, the Bulls have the sixth worst net rating in the league. You know, they're 7-10. It's not like they're a team that projects to go anywhere or win anything. They're more excited. But I mean, I think you have to trade Vooch, you know, if you're running the team. But I don't know if I would trust this team to trade them while they're in the playoff hunt. And you know, that is like the weird thing with the Bulls. Like you kind of feel like there's a guys that have legit star potential in this draft, and you know, you kind of want your draft pick this year and a chance to get that pick to move up, like a realistic chance, which you got to probably be in the bottom seven in records to do that. And from a standings perspective, you know, even though we're currently slotted seven, we're in a three-way tie for 7, 8, and 9. So it's not like we're, you know, like solid seven. We're like a half game out of like 12th. So, you know, like you're right there. It's not, it's like just a bunch of teams bunched up in this kind of like status. So I don't know. I hope we will trade him. And I think he is tradable. I think now a team would be like, whatever, he's playing great this year. Even if he sucks next year, it's 1 year. He doesn't have a ton of money left.
Well, that's the thing too, is like Vooch and Zach are winning games for you right now. They're absolutely doing that together. Zach's at 52% from the field, 43% from three, 79% from the free throw line. So he's basically almost at 50, 40, 80. It's incredible how well he's playing. His turnovers are still a little too high, but overall, averaging 22.3 points a game, I think he's reminded the entire league, man, this guy's an incredible scorer. And he's averaging, you know, 5 boards, 4 assists. He does a lot on the offensive end. And so, like, he's clearly, I think, rehabbed his trade value. Vooch, I think at this point you got to say, is absolutely a player who should be traded. But they're winning games for you. So, you know, I think if December 15 comes around and these guys are still on the roster, or at least, you know, until the trade deadline, they're still on the roster, I think that's an indication the Bulls have decided they're going to go for it. Because I think they will make the playoffs. I will be honest. Now that if you look at the East is such a tire fire. You got the Wizards. The Sixers are awful. Raptors, Nets, Pacers, Hornets, Hawks, and Pistons are all below the Bulls right now. With the exception of probably, I would say, the Pacers and Sixers, I don't think any of those other teams are better than the Bulls. You know, so they're at least a 10 seed if they really want to try. And that gets you into the play-in. I think that's the worst-case scenario, though. And I do, I got to wonder what they do. But I'd hope they'd be smart enough to say, all right, these two guys have rehabbed their value. Let's turn it into some type of draft asset and move forward. But it sounds like to me you don't think that's going to happen.
I don't know. You know what? Like Vooch was terrible for 3 years and then just had a career year out of nowhere. So maybe our general manager and executive vice president will be terrible for 3 years and have a career year out of nowhere. That's what I can hope for, right? I don't know what else to say about it. Like they've never done anything that inspires you that, like given a chance to claw for the play-in, that they would say, nah, let's get our draft pick. Like nothing about anything they've done in their history makes you think that they would do the calculus that way.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
So maybe that'll change. You know, they did move Caruso and DeRozan this offseason, which is maybe a thought towards that. So maybe that'll change. But in the past, that has not been the case. Funny thing about Zach LaVine, you know how much I hate on-off numbers?
Yes.
Generally speaking?
Yes.
So I'm going to quote one anyway, and I'm going to apologize to everyone because the discourse around on-off numbers is so stupid. But Zach LaVine, plus 14.3
on-off this year. I had no idea it was that high.
So for a guy who has historically been criticized for not moving the needle.
Yes.
Like this year so far, moving the needle.
Could you tweet that out so I could retweet it? Because that is something I do believe in. I know you don't, but I want to highlight it.
Well, you shouldn't believe in it because it's awful. If you want to use it, start looking at EPM.
Okay.
Which is the on-off numbers on the Dunks and Threes website. You got to pay to make it like easy to use.
Yeah.
But EPM is actually a meaningful number because it gets rid of like all the dumb stuff. So at least if you're going to use that number, EPM is like a reasonable version of it. Whereas the raw on-off number is just completely ridiculous. Like if you're on a bad team, your number is automatically worse.
Well, speaking of on-off numbers, I did want to jump into another hot topic, which is Josh Giddey. And it seems like in general, I think fans are turning on him pretty heavily right now. 17 games. I mean, to me, he's exactly what I expected. Like, on offense, he shows flashes. I mean, he's definitely shot the ball from three a little bit better than I expected, but he's at 35.5 now, and I think you'll continue to see that go down to, you know, his customary 33 or 32%. I mean, if he stays there, that's fine, but, you know, every one of them is wide open. Nobody's guarding him out there. He's shooting 68% from the free throw line. Effective field goal percentage of 48%. I mean, overall, bad shooter, horrible defender, great rebounder, great passer. Exactly what we kind of expected. I'm a little confused as to why there's like such a massive change right now at this point after 17 games and people are so turning on him and like, no way. I do agree. There's no way you can sign this guy at 30 or even 20.
No.
What's your take on Josh Giddey, where he's at right now? Where do you see this ending?
I think I would look to trade him. I don't think there'll be any market. And then I would probably not look to bring him back.
Wow.
If the money gets down to like $15 million a year or $10 million a year, like role player money, sure. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't go big money on him. Wouldn't go 20. So yeah, that's where I'd be at right now. And you know, we were talking in the off season, and I think you were really negative, and I was trying to get you to not be so negative. But I did say, like, I think you're right about everything you're saying. I think this probably isn't going to work. It's just like it's a reasonable thing to try. Like if he fixed his shooting, man, there's so many other good things here. But he probably won't. But then it's like the alternatives are like mid-round draft pick. As it turns out, like, man, the guys in that mid-round of this last draft just destroying like the top of the draft, which is not always unusual in one of these. Like, we talked about that too. Like, a draft where the top is like very, very dicey and it's harder to tell the difference, you're likely to get the really good players out of nowhere because it's harder to figure out who the really good players are. But like McCain is like probably rookie of the year. I think he was 16. Connect is like in that running, and I think he was 17. You know, so and Devin Carter hasn't gotten to play yet. He was the guy we liked at 13. You know, he had a torn shoulder or something. You know, so still might be okay. But like I think even a couple of the other guys, like Misi was, I don't know, maybe in early 20s or late teens. So like a lot of good players have come from that area where if you know, who knows if we'd have taken the right one at 13, but boy, there was opportunity there, and you'd rather have one of those guys right now than Josh Giddey, to be honest.
No doubt. Dalton Connect, I mean, nobody questioned Dalton Connect's skill as a shooter. The question was he was his age. He was older, and he was, you know, players are often, you know, discounted. It's a discount against them, and they'll fall. Right,
he's older than Giddey now.
He's older than Giddey now, exactly. I mean, yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so, I mean, like, if you look at, like, how much he's going to improve, I mean, like, you should look at Giddey as having more potential to improve his game from here forward than Connect, because he's
well said.
He's actually younger. But I mean, like, but it doesn't matter. Connect has a skill that like immediately translates and is immediately valuable. And you know, he's shown he can fit in the NBA right away. Right? It's like Giddey's this weird platypus that like doesn't. You know, is hard to build around, and that's why I wouldn't keep him. Is it's like you're gonna enter this rebuilding thing, and it's like, why do you want to have a guy that you need four specialty guys around to make work when you're trying to start a franchise from, you know, near zero? Like, that doesn't make any sense. You need to get guys that can work in a variety of situations, and so Giddey's got to prove he can do that by the end of the year. And it's not hopeless that he can get better by the end of the year, but if he doesn't, you know, he's got to go.
He absolutely does, because you can't have a player that bad on the perimeter defensively, and he's not going to get better because he's just limited athletically. He could get a little bit better, you know, understanding the angles and studying how to play better
defense.
He's
got to bulk up and play power forward.
He is way too weak. That, agreed.
That is just what he has to do. If he's going to make it in this league, he's 6'8", is a good rebounder. He's got to be like Boris Diaw. Like that is his path to be a player in this league. And you put him on, like, it's not like there's tons of burner power forwards out there that are going to destroy him. He's got to get strong enough to defend those guys. And that's his path forward. Like, because he's never going to be able to defend on the perimeter. So he's got to be a guy that just kind of defends, like, bigger, slower guys. And he's got to be strong enough to do it. And that also is going to be super hard for him. So, like, I think it's going to be tough for him to really be more than a niche role player in this league. And Yeah, that's fine. But we just got to make sure we sign him to a niche role player contract if we keep him. And, you know, like, yeah, maybe you're a bench guy.
That's
you
what
you want to leave
is.
OKC because you want to be a starter. But, like, you know, after this year, you're not a starter. Like, if you're not a starter on the Bulls, you're not a starter somewhere else. Like, so I think the reality will hit him too in the market when he looks for a contract and like some of that stuff. Like, I totally get where he's like, I'm average. I can get triple doubles. I can do this. I can do that. Like, I want to, you know, try to grow my career and whatever. But, you know, the reality is the reality. And no one's going to pay him a ton of money. No one else is going to do these things. And he'll accept that. And then he'll do the best thing for himself, which is to become a bench player.
I think the vast majority of the league is, and executives in the league have become smart enough to realize that those counting stats that he puts up, it doesn't translate to wins. Like, there are other things into the game that you need to bring that he doesn't bring that are really detrimental to the success of your team. And I think he's going to have a place in the league for 10 years, but it's going to be as leading a bench unit, coming off the bench as a point guard off the bench on the offensive side. And you're right, he's got to get stronger and play because he can't guard. Anytime he's at, oh my gosh, Doug, how many times this year have you seen him just embarrassing blow-bys, you know, where guys are just one dribble right past them on the perimeter. Yeah. Just too slow laterally to do it. And so you have to have a guy who can defend the rim behind you. But that's exactly what he had in Oklahoma City. And you got to have 3-point shooters around him. And he kind of has that now because the Bulls, for whatever reason, are shooting incredibly well. But the tap dance to make him effective, to contribute to winning for your team, is so difficult to do. And you really need to build the team perfectly to do it. And again, like I always say, these guys are doing a tap dance wearing muddy Timberlands. So it's not going to work. You can't do it. And, you know, I agree. Like, if it's $10, $15 million a year, 3-year deal, I'd do that. No problem. But also, too, like, signing him, if you sign him anywhere between 20 and 30 for 3 years, for the next 3 years, like, what do you think Kobe White and Io are going to think about that, who are making on these bargain contracts, who are significantly better players? Only a dope would try to argue to, you know, Josh Giddey's a better player than Kobe White or Io. He's not. And I don't care if Io's shooting 26% poorly from three this year. Yes, he's playing shooting the ball very poorly. He'll come back up. He's 10 times the defender. He's a much better player. He just is. That also kind of irks teammates if guys are getting big money. He doesn't deserve it because you got to play hardball with him. Is he going to be a restricted free agent? Is that right?
He'll be restricted.
So why don't you just offer him a restricted contract and say, let's see what you can do on the market? I don't think there's anybody who's going to give him a big contract. I may be wrong.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't think you want to bring him back on the qualifying offer. You're better off just letting him walk. Those deals are so weird, those one-year ones. But either way, I agree. Like, fundamentally, I still agree with you. Like, you can't offer him a lot. Like, I'd be like, yep, 3 years, mid-level exception, something like
that.
Yeah,
I found one nugget from Will Gottlieb, our friend, the GOAT, that I never saw. I don't know how I missed this. It must have been in an October article he had, but this is going back to the last trade deadline. The Bulls took calls on Caruso, but never made them. According to a source with knowledge of the situation, the Bulls had received offers from multiple teams consisting of multiple protected first-round picks ahead of the 2024 trade deadline. Now, here's the part I did not know. I knew that. I did not know this. One of those deals included a pick that ended up in the top 10 of the 2024 draft, the source said. The Golden State Warriors were among teams who made strong multiple offers for Caruso, sources confirmed. So the part I did not know was that one of those deals that they turned down ended up being a top 10 pick in the 2024 draft, which could have been, you know, Edie, one of these other players that we like. Did you know that, Doug?
No, and I don't know. I am always suspicious of this type of news where someone's like, yeah, this happened. There were these types of deals. I can't name names. I can't name teams. I can't name anything. But I have a source that says this. And I don't mean like any offense to Will, but like I just, whatever. I don't plant that as a real rumor. That I can put any faith in. And, you know, I was a quasi insider for a while. And when I talked with people, you would just hear all kinds of crazy BS. And it was like super hard to verify it. And so something that is so light on the details as that, I don't put that in my mental Rolodex as I believe this is a thing that really happened. Like, it could have happened. I'm not saying I'm not saying Will's lying or anything. I'm sure someone told him this. I just can't put any faith in, like, the veracity of it, because I've been in the position where people telling me stuff and later it was completely verified. It was like BS. Hmm. And like 75% of the stuff was of that nature. And so if you can't even name names or teams or whatever, it often then feels like a hatchet job or someone with an agenda to be like, yeah, look how dumb. So I take it with a grain of salt. Like, I just leave it at that. Like, yeah, maybe.
I suspect the team, though, I took the next step to figure out who that team was. I bet you it was Oklahoma City, because they had the 6th overall pick in last year's draft. They were freaking awesome. Much better than I think most people expected at a time of the year. I bet you it was Oklahoma City. I don't know. They somehow
Memphis wasn't going to do it last year. No.
Who knows? But that was the only team I could kind of look at in the top 10. I guess maybe you could say Memphis. I don't know. Looking at it, no, Memphis was tanking at that point. Yeah, not last year. But that was the one team. And I don't know, that would make sense to me. Like, if I was, I absolutely could have used Alex Caruso last year down the stretch for the, anyhow. And at that point, too, there was big debate on whether or not, you know, Caruso should even be starting. I mean, not Caruso, Giddey should have been starting for Oklahoma City. It was a pretty big topic of conversation that he was not a good fit with that lineup. Enough said on that. Let's move on to Patrick Williams, who unfortunately now has an injury. The good news is every report I've seen, you know, from our friends Joe Cowley and Will Gottlieb, it's not anywhere as painful as it was last year. But obviously, Patrick Williams having issues in his foot, the one that he had surgery on, is not a good thing. What are you laughing about? Patrick's not having a great year. He's shooting 37% from the field, 39% from three, which says a lot about his ability to finish. But I thought he was playing unquestionably better and playing, you know, at a much higher level over the past few games before the injury. What say you?
Well, he's been just atrocious all year. Then Casey Johnson tweeted he had 5 games in a row where he averaged, or had double figures, not average, had double figures, 5 straight games, which is like the lowest bar in the world for a guy who plays like 36 minutes. 3 of those games were like 10, 12, and 13 points. Like, it was still like a terrible scoring rate. But then he had 2 good games. So he had 2 good games back to back. Then he had 2 bad games, and then he was out with the foot injury, if memory serves me correctly. Maybe it was only, I think it was 2 bad games, and he was out with the foot injury. And maybe those 2 bad games were partially due to his foot being sore. One of them, he was questionable to go into the game, and they played him, and then now they're resting him for a week. So certainly his foot could have been impacting his performance in that game. So I don't think Pat's been good this year, just to start with that. Like, the fact that he had 2 games in a row that were okay, like, how low of the bar do we need to set for this guy? Like, you know, it's just...
We could go lower.
I don't know how much lower we can get, to be honest. Like, but... you know, the foot thing is really scary. I tweeted out when he was like just probable with like the foot thing. I'm like, I think I had tweeted like, I'm not saying this is a big deal, but it's definitely not a big deal, or you know, something to that. Like this is something that raised my eyebrow. Like, this could be really bad. And now he's out for like at least a week. And then I said, like, anytime a guy is out at least a week, like, he's out more than a week, right? If the minimum is a week, you're almost certainly not going to come back on the minimum. Like, maybe you will, but more times than not, it's not going to be the exact minimum timeline. So, you know, that's terrible. And we talked in the offseason when his contract was signed, he had a bone bruise, and Lonzo missed 2.5 years with a bone bruise in his knee and had all these other problems. You know, bone bruises are just notoriously difficult to heal. Sometimes it's like a not that bad of an injury, but if it's bad enough, you have to have surgery. It's usually pretty bad, and then the recovery is very spotty. I noted going into the season, we should be patient with Pat because he probably wasn't going to be in good shape, and he hasn't been. And that's probably going to be hard for him to maintain being in good shape if he keeps having to rest. And, yeah, I think it's going to be a tough season for him, and I think you're going to have to hope you get value for him down the line because I don't think he's going to have a good year. I think this is going to be a recurrent thing. I think he's going to have a hard time staying in the physical condition that he needs to. I mean, you've seen all that stuff floating around, I assume, about how many dunks he's missed.
Yes, seven.
You know, like...
Seven dunks.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's made two.
Fits right into my prediction.
But, so, I mean, it's he's not playing well right now, you know, before this. So, yeah, I just think it's going to be tough. I think he's in a tough boat physically. Like, I don't think he's ready. And I think it's going to be hard to get, you know, because he needs to get in shape. Like, he looks like he's carrying extra weight from the long layoff. And when your foot is always acting up and getting inflamed, that's just really hard to do, right? So I don't see how he's going to manage that without an extended rest. And that is part of the problem with something like a bone bruise, is this is the thing people go through, and it's why they really struggle with it. So I don't mean this to be entirely damning on him. I think physically he is not at his peak, and he is playing more aggressive. I think some of those mental things seem like they've flipped a teeny bit for him, and when he's on the floor, it looks like he's doing more of the things we want to see him doing. But I think he's physically not in a state to be able to have the impact you want him to have, and I just don't see how he's going to get there given all the stuff going on with him and where he is at this moment.
Yeah, he's the same guy he's always been. He brings good defense, not great. You know, it's definitely overrated, but it's good. 9.9 points per game, which is right in line where he's been for 5 years. 39.4% from three. Excellent three-point shooter, so there's value in his game. But everything else, I mean, gets to the line 1.7 free throw attempts per game in 28 minutes. Come on, dude. He's the same guy he's always been. I will state, though, in one area I've noticed improvement is his passing. He's absolutely improved there. Like, he's averaging 2.3 assists, which doesn't sound like a lot because it isn't, but it's like double, I think, from what he's done before. So... I've noticed that, like, this year. Hey, man, that was a nice pass. I've actually said that several times watching Bulls games, that Patrick Williams seems to be passing the ball better, but that's the only part of his game that seems to improve to me.
If you look at his numbers, his rebounds per minute are, like, 6.2 per 36 now versus a career average of 5.5. So that's a decent bump up, too, which is, like, in an area we thought he needed to improve. So I think he's played more aggressively, and then I think part of these numbers are down actually because, like I said, I think physically he is not where he has been in the past because he's had this long layoff. And I feel like he's made some advancements, but they've not been able to take place because he's not physically there. And but it doesn't matter. Like I said, I don't think he's going to physically get there this year. And for a guy who's missed so many games in his career, you have to wonder, like, is this guy ever going to be healthy? I thought this was a hilarious note. Patrick Williams has missed one third of his total potential, like, career games in the NBA. And he played one season where he had played all 82, right? And he still missed a third of his total potential games.
I think that was 72.
Yeah.
72. That was his
No, it was 82. He played 82 games. The year of Vooch and him both played 82. That was in his third year. He played 71 in his first year. I got his page up now, so I don't have this memorized. But Zach LaVine, who is viewed as super injury prone, has played a greater percentage of his games. And, like, he tore an ACL. Like, you know, had, like, this one massive injury. Like, you know, Patrick Williams is not commonly viewed as super highly injury prone player. But I think you have to view him that way now. With the bone bruise he had, that this is the type of injury that makes you injury prone, that lingers, that you're in and out of the lineup. This is not the type of injury where it's like, oh, I broke my thumb trying to dunk the ball and now I have to have surgery and I'm out for like 2 months or something, but like there's no real concern it's going to happen again. This now is an injury that you should be super concerned is going to be a problem for 2 years. And create other injuries that are a problem, and you have to view him as injury prone now, I think.
I think that's the biggest issue, is that these type of foot injuries, I remember I had a severely sprained ankle that led to other injuries in your knee. Your body naturally tries to compensate for it, and that's to me the bigger issue, since he has said it's not as painful as it was before. But I agree, any injury.
Well, he had surgery and was out the rest of the season before, so like, great. I'm glad we don't expect you to have surgery and miss the rest of the year.
It's not as bad as it was.
Fantastic. I mean, like, that was like really bad. That's like, I might not be a season ender doesn't seem like a high upside statement to me right now. I got to be honest with you.
Good point. Good point. I mean, there's not a lot to celebrate with Patrick Williams.
No,
this year.
There is not anything to celebrate.
I'd give him a D on his overall performance this season.
Yeah, I don't want to give him a grade because, like I said, I just think he's physically not ready. And it's hard to judge someone in that boat. Like, but I mean, from the Bulls' perspective, it's been terrible. Like from what we've gotten, it's been terrible, and it wasn't unpredictable. Like we were concerned when he signed the contract. Like the numbers weren't so bad relative to what you thought he might be. But the big thing I talked about was like we got no discount for him having massive injury risk. Like he's not fully recovered from a bone bruise, and we didn't get a discount for that. And it's like these injuries sometimes linger, and here we are in that exact situation. And you preemptively made this contract before he hit free agency, where there likely wasn't going to be a market. And then when the market was set, it was all below his number. You know, like the number didn't shock me when we first saw it. Like I was like, oh, okay, that doesn't seem so bad. But it was like, if you had waited, you would have probably shaved $5 million off that number. And yeah, it's just like our process is so bad.
Injury or not, there were enough people in the Williams camp who blamed all his deficiencies on the president. Since DeMar DeRozan, I think at this point, though, it's safe to say those people can pound sand. That was a ridiculous assertion that there were plenty of opportunities for Patrick Williams to step up when DeMar DeRozan was here. He's the exact same player he was pre-DeRozan, post-DeRozan. You know, this is who he is. So DeRozan wasn't holding him back. He's holding himself back.
Apparently, DeRozan was holding Vooch and Zach. That's what we could say.
I guess. Maybe you're right.
Yeah. Maybe Caruso was holding everyone back. Maybe that's the real thing. We got rid of Caruso, and now everyone is playing great. I don't know.
I love how you find a way to take another shot at Caruso.
I do not believe that. Caruso is awesome. I love Alex Caruso. It made sense that he was traded, but it's sad that he's gone. Like, and Caruso was great.
Maybe Gordon Tragic was holding everyone back. All right, let's look at another player we got to talk about, Modest Mania. I mean, people are going nuts. So far this season, he's shooting 32% from the field, 33% from three. Effective field goal percentage of 41%. Those are some horrific numbers, but, you know, not a lot of time. 9 minutes per game, 3.3 points per game. Definitely seeing a little bit of improvement. I probably arguably his best game of the year yesterday, or one of them. What are you seeing out of Modest that makes you get excited?
Honestly,
you don't seem too
excited.
I'm
not too excited right now, but the potential is there. You know, like he really is like a lot taller. He needs to fill out more, but like you can see how it's all going to come together eventually. That's what I'm excited about. But in the short term, he often looks completely lost. His shot is generally completely broken. He's not like an effective player. He sometimes gets some big dunks. Like I'm going to read you out this stat line of the game you just described as his best game. 3 of 8 from the field. One of those was a breakaway dunk, just so you know.
Still counts.
Where he just ran the
Patrick
floor.
Williams like
he didn't make this deal.
Almost 20% on breakaway dunks. So you gotta give him a pat on the back.
To be fair, all of his misses were contested.
All right.
Like he didn't just wide open. I think maybe one was a wide open miss. Anyway, so 3 of 8. One of those was a breakaway dunk. 1 of 4 from three. 2 of 2 from the free throw line, 4 boards, 0 assists, 1 steal, 3 turnovers, 4 fouls, 9 points.
Or maybe it wasn't his best game.
It might have been. Like, it's pretty close. But probably his best game was three of three from the 3-point line in a game earlier against, I think it was Cleveland, in like 10 minutes or something. That might have been his best game, but you know, clearly just crazy shooting luck. You know, in the end, it's like he still can't shoot, and he just needs more time. I'm not trying to be down on Modest at all, but I'm down on Modest doing a whole lot this year. You know, sometimes he looks decent defensively, he makes some good defensive plays. Other times, as any rookie will do, he looks a little lost. But I like his defensive potential in the long run. I think he'll be a guy you can do some interesting things with because he'll be a shot blocker. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens with him. I'm optimistic about him over a longer period of time, But, you know, it's some of the things you say about Josh Giddey are true with Mattis too. Like, he needs to learn to shoot. The one thing I would say about Mattis, like, compared to Giddey, like, if I was to describe, like, Giddey's form, he looks like a 12-year-old trying to heave the ball from the three-point line but isn't strong enough to get it there. Like, he's like, leaning way forward. His, like, feet are off balance. His, like, arms are, like, all gangling in the wrong place. And if you looked at Mattis's form, he's, like, taking step back, sidestep, you know, perfect rise upwards, follow through with his arm, like a really quick release, not bringing the ball way down low. Like, if you ignored what happened after he let go of the ball, you would just look like, yeah, this guy can shoot.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
he looks like he can shoot. So I'm optimistic that that shot is going to come around compared to Giddey, where it's just like, yeah, you're so bad. And some guys have bad form, like Tyrese Haliburton has terrible form, but is a good shooter. So it's not like complete disqualifier to becoming a good shooter, but Mattis has really good form, and so it should get there eventually. Most guys who have really good form are gonna get there eventually.
Yeah, agreed. And one of the areas that Mattis, I think, was kind of undersold was in his ball handling. He's a really good ball handler for his size.
Yes,
and I actually think he's if you just started watching a game, I think most people would say he might even be a better ball handler than Josh Giddey.
No. That's ridiculous.
I don't think Giddey's got the tightest handles. I actually like Mattis' ball handling. I think it's been really good. Almost every time he's come in the game, he's had a couple plays with handling the ball where I've just been like, wow, I didn't know. He just looks good. That's one aspect of his game.
We were saying that in Summer League. I mean, since Summer League, we were saying like he really handles the ball. The problem is, as a ball handler, if you can't finish and you can't shoot, like, it doesn't do a lot for you. Right, it's like he dribbles in and then like nothing happens. It reminds me of like Marquise Teague. Like, I'm really fast, I'm really athletic, I can get to the paint, but then I can't finish. I can't do anything once I'm there. But like it's a skill that is so good foundationally that if he makes the next pieces of it work, he could be like dominant. Like, it's almost like if everything comes together for Mattis, he's going to be like a star. Because he's got this ball handling, like, he could become a really great creator if the shot comes around and the scoring comes around, because he has the other pieces. Like, Patrick Williams is like the counterexample, like, terrible ball handler, like, just stripped every time he tries to put the ball down. And so it's like, yeah, even if he's got this shot and even if he stops blowing all his dunks, it's like he doesn't have the ball handling to do anything. But Mattis does. Mattis has the ball handling to be a legit creator if the other pieces of his game round out over time.
I grow weary of the constant complaints that Mattis needs more minutes. I do think there is a legit issue or potential for him to lose confidence if he just continues to get his ass kicked in a lot of these games, which has absolutely happened. People don't want to admit that, but a lot of his minutes have been awful. Just awful. So, you know, he just doesn't... I don't believe just handing him 20 minutes a game. I think he should play every game. 10 minutes a game. I have no problem with him playing in the G League. You know, you could see he has the ability to develop into a good ball player. He isn't now. He just isn't. He's not a good enough shooter. So, yeah. Let's trade some guys, yeah, and then
that's it. Hand him, I agree.
Then I'll be fine. If we're going to trade Zach, we're going to trade Vooch, and then there'll be plenty of time to give Mattis to play. But right now, let him earn it. Let him get better. Let him build confidence, because he's not going to have confidence if he keeps on playing 20 minutes and just getting destroyed.
Doesn't feel like confidence is his problem.
You say that, but I don't believe that. I think guys can act like they're the most confident guy in the world, but if you get your ass kicked 20 minutes a night every night and get embarrassed, you're going to lose internal confidence. You can act like you're confident, you can still lose it. And I saw that, Doug. We saw that at the Utah game. He had a couple wide open threes that he passed on. And to me, that's a sign that the guy's losing a little bit of confidence. I might be wrong there, but let's move on to the last topic before we bring the bus in. Dalen Terry. Dalen Terry has been playing very, very well. I mean, for him to be shooting 44% from three, I know not a ton of attempts, but that just shows, and I noticed that in his pregame when we went to the Utah game, he was really, it was a completely different player than when I saw his rookie year, second year, as far as like working on a shot in the pregame, being serious about taking pregame seriously. Everybody says he's a nice kid, but he is actually putting up, I think, a pretty solid season and showing that he is a valuable rotation player. I don't think he's a starting quality player, but I absolutely can see him coming off the bench because I do like his defense. I do like his vision and his passing. And if his shot's going to get to be average, which according to numbers is probably above average right now, it's good for the Bulls. What say you?
I say you got to stop looking at three-point percentage so much.
No, not in this league, Doug. Like, you got to look at it. It's very important.
Yeah, no. Three-point ability is important, but you focus way too much on the percentage. Like, the percentage is not a very meaningful number all in of itself. He's taken 18 attempts on the year. Like, I mean, who cares what his percentage is? He's still scared to shoot. He still passes out of him. No one guards him there. You know, like, it's not a threat. So to say he's like, above average because he's shooting 44% on 18 attempts is a ridiculous statement.
It's not a ridiculous statement. Like, he's shooting the ball well.
It is. No one cares about him there. No, but if no one is near you and no one is guarding you and you hit him like 44% on like super wide open ones, like, it just is not the same.
Agreed.
It's like for a while, and Giddey was shooting over 40% from three early on probably more than 18 attempts at that point in time. But it was like no one guarded him. No one was anywhere near him. And then eventually his shot just fell off and teams were like, yeah, whatever. If Giddey hits like two threes a game, okay. We know he's not going to shoot him anyway. Even when he's wide open, he doesn't want to shoot him. And Dalen Terry is the same way. But the rest of what you said about Dalen Terry, I think is good. I just don't overestimate that percentage. He's got to get like some real attempts up, and guys, if they start guarding him, it's going to be different. But Dalen Terry's defense has come a long way. I agree with you on the seriousness of which he approaches the game. Feels like at a different level. It seems like he's matured. And yeah, his form is still not great. He is not Josh Giddey bad, but he doesn't have great form. So I don't have a lot of confidence in that 3-point shot really coming around. But the rest of his offense has been better. You know, he shot a little better everywhere else. So, you know, we'll see. He looks like he's at least a niche like defensive player. And for a while, you just didn't think you were going to get anything out of him. And now he at least looks like, yeah, you can bring him in. He's a long, rangy defender. I've been really impressed with his defensive versatility when he goes out there. I think he might actually be the Bulls' best defender.
Yeah.
Try and run through an arrow.
Patrick Williams pretty good, too.
He's better than Patrick Williams. Patrick Williams sucks at defense. I'm just going to say it. Everyone thinks he's so great. He's not. He's like become a, like this year, he's like a plotter. He's not even like athletic anymore. And that's probably due to the foot, but like, he's not that great at defense. He's a terrible help defender. He's like completely lost if the ball's not in front of him. Dalen Terry is like good all around. Like, he's good on help. He's good on primary. He switches. He is way more cerebral than Patrick Williams. He sees the floor better. Yeah, just wish he had Patrick Williams' shot. And Dalen Terry would be a player.
In general, though, the arrow's pointing up for Dalen Terry. I think you can agree there.
Yeah,
he's
for sure.
Playing better.
For sure.
And I think that's something that we should take some solace in as we bring the Big Red Bus in after another good show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Looking forward to talking again some Bulls soon. Let's look at the schedule really quick before we go for the next couple games for the beloved Bull. I'd like to get your predictions on.
Sure.
All right, here we go.
Memphis.
They got Memphis at home. At Wizards, at Magic, at Celtics. What say you, DT?
I mean, you'd think they'll beat the Wizards.
Lose it to Magic and lose it to Celtics.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, I think they'd lose to Memphis as well. So, yeah, 1-4. But, you know, whatever. I believe that Washington game, if I'm not mistaken, is an NBA Cup game. And if the Bulls win it, they'll be 2-1. The Celtics, I think, would be their final NBA Cup game. If they win those two games, they might actually make it out of group play. But they're probably not going to beat the Celtics.
I'd say that's highly unlikely. But who knows? You never know when Kobe White gets going.
You never know. Like, you never know. Like, the Bulls have shown now they can have a hot night where they just shoot really well and run a team out of the gym.
That's true.
And we're going to have an off night. So it's unlikely, but yeah, whatever. Like last year, I think they lost all their games, didn't they? If I remember, they lost like the first three. Like they're, at least now, if we win the Washington game, which is the next one, we'll be 2-1, and you could at least for a couple days hope, you know, and it'd be interesting.
I just hope we can lock down the 7th seed. That's all I want. The tweets are going to be amazing.
I want lock down the the seven NBA lottery odds and then move up and then take 7 seconds to decide on taking Cooper
Flagg. Why do I have a feeling we're going to be seventh pick this year? I think it's going to happen. I can see it coming. Anyhow, my friend, it was always good talking to you, DT. Until next time, let's go Bulls.
Go Bulls.